This episode of the Merry Podcast is dedicated to Pauline Larson, a dear friend we lost in October 2011. Her love of laughter and good humor endeared her to all of us, and we can hear her laugh and see her smile all over the material presented in this episode, some of it introduced to me by Pauline over the years. We love and miss you, Polly. You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
I want to live again, and I want to look them straight in the eye, and I want to tell them what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless...
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around as well, but one of the worst is commercial. Makeup, even in Brooklyn it's the same.
That thing had nine lives, she just spent them all. Woo!
Dare you.
I don't believe you're an angel. I think you're a demon right out of...
Henry, don't say that.
Does someone need a hug?
Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Sentimental hogwash.
What was the last thing you and Charlie did before you went to bed Christmas Eve?
We shared a bowl of sugar, some shots of brown liquor, played my shotguns, field dressed a cat, look for women.
I'm the worst toy maker in the world. I'm a cotton-headed ninny muggins.
My mouth's bleeding, Bert! My mouth's bleeding! Doo-doo pedals! Doo-doo! There they are! Bert! What do you know about that? Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to this, the 13th episode of the Merry Podcast of My Merry Christmas. We are the internet's longest ongoing celebration of Christmas and the world's largest online community dedicated to Christmas. My name is Jeff Westover and I am the founder of the feast at MyMerryChristmas.com and your host here on the Merry Podcast and at the Merry Forums. We turn now to the lighter side of Christmas here on the Merry Podcast as we celebrate the comedy of Christmas. The season of cheer and merriment has so many outlets for letting one's hair down, from cheerful music to funny stories and plays to Christmas shows of comedy and warmth. It is hard to know how to begin, how to explore it all. It would be important to note that some of the earliest known holiday celebrations in recorded history included plenty of light-hearted fare. In a recent feature posted at My Merry Christmas, we explain the connection of Halloween to Christmas through the tradition of mummers plays. Anciently, it was a harvest tradition of the holidays in parts of Old England and Wales to gather family and friends into traveling bands of holiday revelers who would go door to door seeking treats and performing folk plays of comedy, all in an effort to wish a homeowner well for the new year ahead. What was the content of such folk plays? Well, let's just say that it was usually an irreverent poke in the eye of something sacred. Something, perhaps, like this from Bob Rivers, telling the perspective of Christmas from the vantage point of the angel at the top of the tree.
I'd like to find the guy who done me wrong and stuck my butt up on this Christmas tree. Who put the
stomp in my rump-a-bump-a-bump. Who took and jammed it in my ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong? Who stood the wood where I poop-she-poop-she-poop? Who put the stick up my hip-de-dip-de-dip? Who was that man? He shoved it up my can and left me stranded on this Christmas tree.
Yeah.
When this angel heard chop pop 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 chop pop pop pop, a dreadful fear went right into my heart. Those pine tree needles sting me. Ram-a-jamma, ram-a-jamma near my ding-dong. You'll never know how much that smarts. So who put the stomp in my rump-a-bump-a-bump? Who took and jammed it in my ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong? Who stood the wood where I poop-she-poop-she-poop? Who put the stick up my hip-de-dip-de-dip? Who took that bush and crammed it in my tush? He made this angel beg for mercy, please.
Yeah.
Each night when I'm alone, scratchity, 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 shoo, it sets my tiny bottom all aglow. And every time I wiggle, slip didin didin, slip didin didin, a little further in it goes. Oh,
yeah.
That's sure a beautiful angel.
What's the matter with the star? It's a pretty star.
Christmas is a funny business. Hardly a Christmas passes when a memory isn't made or that a funny memory isn't recalled. Here's Bill Cosby talking about Christmas in his youth and waiting for Santa Claus.
Christmas time. I remember my brother and I, James, we slept in the same bed, not only at Christmas time, but always. And, you know, parents are funny because kids have a great time. It's like around 9 o'clock at night. That's when kids, I really had a great time. We were laughing and giggling and bumping our head. You know, having a great pouring water on each other. And the first thing the parent says, "You're getting silly. Go to bed." You know, they don't understand. You know, why? How come we're having fun? No, we want you to look like us. Be evil, smoke, drink, you know, that kind of thing. But now, I remember waiting for Santa Claus. Now, Santa Claus to me was the great man. You know, gifts are coming, and I've been wondering if I had been good during that time of the whole year and everything. And we couldn't wait for Santa Claus to come. And the heart's really tom, 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 tom. You know, Santa Claus is coming. I wish he'd come now, you know, and the clock stops. It just stops. He never comes. So he said, "Well, now, for Santa Claus to come, let's go to sleep now." Yeah, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Try and go to sleep. You know, run upstairs and jump into bed. You ever really try and go to sleep? Nothing, you know. And then you start talking. "Fetch, why'd you tear Bob, fetch you?" "Fetch you, Chopper." "You kids better be quiet. That's not us talking. We're not talking up there. You better go to sleep or Santa Claus is going to give you nothing. Put coal in your stocking." "See, that's your fault. He's going to put coal in your stocking." "No, he's not going to put it in mine. He's put it in your stocking." "Yeah, and if he does, I'm going to tell him that you wet the bed every night, too. And I'm tired of rolling over on the coal spot. I'll tell you that right now. I'm sick of this." Yeah. No, we really had a great time, my brother.
America's melting pot makes Christmas a universal celebration, even for kids who aren't Christian. Here is Adam Sandler talking about Hanukkah with a song he wrote for other Jewish kids to sing during the holidays.
Okay, this is a song that there's a lot of Christmas songs out there, and not too many Hanukkah songs, so Wrote a song for all those nice little Jewish kids who don't get to hear any Hanukkah songs. Here we go. Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much funukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree,
Here's a list of people who are Jewish.
Just like you and me.
David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do James Conkirk Douglas and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli? Bowser from Shanana and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish, Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together,
what a fine looking Jew. You don't need Deck the Halls or Jingle Bell Rock, cause you can spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, both Jewish.
Put on your yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah. The owner of the Seattle Supersonicas celebrate Hanukkah. O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. But guess who is? Hall of Famer Rod Carew. He converted. We got Ann Landers and her sister, dear Abby. Harrison Ford's a quarter Jewish, not too shabby. Some people think that Ebenezer Scrooge is. Well, he's not, but guess who is? All three Stooges. So many Jews are in showbiz. Tom Cruise isn't, but I heard his agent is. Tell your friend Veronica, it's time to celebrate Hanukkah.
Hope I get a harmonica on this lovely, lovely Hanukkah. So drink your gin and tonica and smoke your marijuana. If you really, really wanna go, have a happy, 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 happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
The story of Christmas is told over and over, and often it is told in different ways. Perhaps no comedian or singer tells stories funnier than Ray Stevens, who tells us here the story of the King of Christmas.
Well, it was 10 o'clock on Christmas Eve. I was wiping eggnog on my sleeve, trying hard to fight those Christmas blues. I went to bed, turned out the light. I woke up sometime around midnight. Thought I heard somebody singing Blue Suede Shoes. Well, I got up, scratched my head. I know that voice, but who? I said, opened the window, looked outside. I saw 9 reindeer parked out back, hitched up to a long pink Cadillac. They looked like they'd just finished one heck of a ride. Well, my hair stood up on the back of my neck. I went downstairs for one quick check. I just had to find out for myself. Well, he was big, that much was true, but he looked like someone else I knew. Not like that white-haired, rosy-cheeked old elf. Oh, it was the king.
He's the king.
The king of Christmas.
He's the king of Christmas.
Alive and well and riding in his sleigh. And I just can't help believing that those tabloids ain't deceiving. Cause the king of Christmas passed me on his way. Oh. Now beneath his cap, jet black hair and sideburns hanging down to there, he wore a silver belt around his waist. Then with a swivel of his hip, he softly curled his upper lip with a look that said Merry Christmas on his face. Then with a karate kick, he whirled around. I saw him writing something down. He took the note and he stuffed it in my sock. Then he put a record under the tree, just before he turned to leave, he hummed a little bit of Jailhouse Rock. Ah, he's the king.
He's the king.
King of Christmas.
He's the king. The king of Christmas.
Alive and well and riding in his sleigh. And I just can't help believing that those tabloids ain't deceiving, 'cause the king of Christmas passed me on his way. Uh-huh. Then he pulled up his collar and he flipped his hair and disappeared into thin air. I saw the sequins glitter on his coat. That 45 that he laid down was Santa Claus is back in town. And I played it while I read words he wrote. I'll outlive rock and roll, it said, and postage stamps and say I'm dead. And at the bottom he signed his famous name. Well, some say the king was put to rest, but me and Santa, we know best. And I'll bet somewhere there's elves who'll say the same. Oh, he's the king.
He's the king.
The king of Christmas.
He's the king. The king of Christmas.
Alive and well and riding in his sleigh. And as I heard that sleigh rev up and fly, through the night there came the cry, Santa Claus has left the building. Uh-huh. Oh, he's the king.
He's the king.
King of Christmas.
He's the king. The king of Christmas.
Alive and well and riding in his sleigh.
Comedy isn't pretty, as Steve Martin is famous for saying, but it does sometimes have a point. In fact, comedy has been used as one of the most effective forms of social messaging about Christmas.
Hit it, boys! Christmas comes but once a year, so you better make hay while the snow is falling. Oh, that's opportunity calling you.
Jingle bells, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Rub your hands, December's here. What a wonderful time to be glad and merry.
Just so you're mercenary too.
Buy an ad and show all the toys up on the shelf.
Just make sure that you get a plug in for yourself. Christmas comes but once a year, so you better cash in while the spirit lingers. It's slipping through your fingers, boy. Don't you realize Christmas can be such a monetary joy?
In the very first episode of the Merry Podcast, we featured the tune you just heard in our telling of the story of Stan Freberg's Green Christmas, a sharply satiric look at the commercialism of Christmas. It is a sentiment echoed in many forms of comedy. Here's comedian Tom Lehrer singing his own version of A Christmas Carol that very much sends the same message.
Christmas time is here, by golly, disapproval would be folly. Deck the halls with hunks of holly, fill the cup and don't say when. Kill the turkeys, ducks, and chickens, mix the punch, drag out the dickens. Even though the prospect sickens, brother, here we go again. On Christmas Day, you can't get sore. Your fellow man you must adore. There's time to rob him all the more. The other 300 and a six, a T, a four. Relations, sparing no expense'll send some useless old utensil or a matching pen and pencil. Just the thing I need. How nice. It doesn't matter how sincere it is, nor how heartfelt the spirit. Sentiment will not endear it. What's important is the price. Hark, the Herald Tribune sings, advertising wondrous things. God rest ye merry merchants, may ye make the Yuletide pay. Angels we have heard on high tell us to go out and buy. So let the raucous sleigh bells jingle, hail our dear old friend Kris Kringle, driving his reindeer across the sky. Don't stand underneath when they fly by.
This theme is a common one that goes from the radio of the 1950s and 60s to the television of the 1970s with Archie Bunker and All in the Family.
Daddy, be nice. It's Christmas.
That's what was for. I guess I sighed because somehow it just don't seem like Christmas.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Ma.
What do you mean you know what she means?
Oh, nothing. I was just going to say that Mom means that we're all kowtowing to Madison Avenue in the almighty cash register. Yeah, she means that Christmas has been exploited by big business. It's a victim of crass commercialism.
Oh, my, did I mean all that?
You know, Michael's right. Christmas is never like what you read about. Nobody ever sits around the fire roasting chestnuts and telling ghost stories.
Maybe that's it, Archie. We got no chestnuts roasting on the fire.
Hey, there's how long we've been living in this here house?
20 years.
20 years? In all them 20 years, you ever happen to notice any fireplaces anywhere?
No.
Nah.
So maybe that's why we don't have chestnuts, huh? Of course, the house happens to be heated by radiators.
That's right, Archie. And radiated chestnuts wouldn't be the same. But it ain't just the nuts. It's the bubble.
Huh?
The bubbles are missing.
Oh, jeez.
I think what Ma's trying to say is you're not your gay, bubbly, Christmassy self, Daddy.
I am gay. I'm gay. I'm as gay as everybody here.
Gee, you sure could have fooled me. What's the matter, Arch? You're acting like you're giving up on Christmas this year. Why are you so down? Where's your Christmas spirit?
What do you mean? Who do you think hung the wreath on the door, huh? One of Santa's gnomes?
Comedy has a way of influencing society in unusual ways. In the 1990s, a bit from Seinfeld took the attack on the commercialism of Christmas to a whole new level and created an alternative holiday known fondly now as Festivus.
Dear son, happy Festivus? What is Festivus?
It's nothing. It's nothing.
When George was growing up,
no!
His father
no!
hated all the commercial and religious aspects of Christmas,
yeah.
So he made up his own holiday.
Oh, and another piece of the puzzle falls into place.
All right.
And instead of a tree, didn't your father put up an aluminum pole?
Right, Jerry, no. Stop it.
And then weren't there feats of strength that always ended up with you crying?
I can't take it anymore. I'm going to work. You happy now?
And at the Festivus dinner, you gather your family around and tell them all the ways they have disappointed you over the past year.
And is there a tree?
No, instead there's a pole. Requires no decoration. I find tinsel distracting.
Frank, this new holiday of yours is scratching me right where I itch.
Let's do it then.
All right.
Festivus is back! I'll get the pole out of the crawl space.
Sometimes the comedy of Christmas even pokes fun at itself. In 1952, little Jimmy Boyd released I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, where it eventually reached number one on the Billboard charts.
I saw Mommy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. She didn't see me creep down the stairs to have a peep. She thought that I was tucked up in my bedroom fast asleep. Then I saw Mommy tickle Santa Claus underneath his beard so snowy white.
The The song immediately caught the ire of the Roman Catholic Church, who condemned the song for associating the art of kissing with Christmas. They eventually worked it out, but the comedic value of the song was seized upon by comedians immediately, with Spike Jonze recording it in 1952 and by Stan Freberg a few years later. Now we have an even naughtier version, this one by Kip Adada, titled I Saw Daddy Kissing Santa Claus.
I saw Daddy kissing Santa Claus underneath a mistletoe last night. He didn't see me creep down the stairs to have a peep. He thought that I was tucked up in my bedroom fast asleep. Then I saw Daddy tickle Santa Claus underneath his beard so snowy white. There must be some mistake. Was I really awake? I rubbed my eyes and moved in close, a better look to take. Then I hey! Daddy hugging Santa Claus. He took his hand and pulled him to the couch. It must have been just fine. Santa didn't seem to mind. Then Daddy moved across the room to pour them both some wine. Then I saw Daddy fondle Santa Claus. Across the floor, I hid behind the door. I left it open just a crack so I could watch some more. Then I saw Daddy undress Santa Claus. They quickly threw their clothes on our big chair. Much to my surprise, I couldn't believe my eyes. It wasn't Santa after all, but Mommy in disguise. But I saw Daddy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. Oh, what a laugh it would have been if I had really seen
It's not like the humor of Christmas was a late 20th century discovery. Much of what we find funny about Christmas today had its start when radio and film were new. Who better to explore this with than with Mary Carey, who shares the story of Laurel and Hardy's Babes in Toyland.
The movie comedy team of Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy has remained popular for generations. From fans who first saw them in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, to fans today who know them only from TV and video. Television has largely neglected Laurel and Hardy in the past couple decades, except for one film that shows up every year during the Christmas season, Babes in Toyland, better known as March of the Wooden Soldiers. In 1934, movie producer Hal Roach decided to star his top comedy team in a film version of Babes in Toyland, a musical extravaganza that debuted on Broadway in 1903. The original show featured nursery rhyme characters and memorable music by Victor Herbert. The lead characters couldn't easily be adapted to fit Laurel and Hardy, so a new story was written by Frank Butler and Nick Grindy. Stanny Dum and Ollie D work in the factory that makes toys for Santa Claus.
Wait until you see the wooden soldiers we made for you. The finest piece of work we've ever turned out.
Lindy!
Yeah, Ollie, go and bring one of them in.
Yes, sir. You better help me, they're heavy. We'll have them right out, Mr. Stanny.
You'll get the surprise of your life. Isn't it wonderful? It does everything but talk.
Wonderful, yes, but not what I ordered.
What do you mean?
I ordered 600 soldiers at 1 foot high.
What? You took that order. What was it? I thought you said 100 soldiers at 6 foot high.
Stan and Ollie's landlady is Mother Peep, the old woman who lives in a shoe.
Well, what's the matter, Mother Peep?
Why, I've got bad news for you.
Bad news?
That old skinflint Barnaby holds a mortgage against this shoe. It's due today, and I haven't got the money to pay him. And we'll all be turned out into the street.
Old Barnaby proposes a compromise.
Compromise?
Yes. Should your daughter reconsider my generous offer to become my wife, we could forget this little matter, and it could be her wedding present.
Don't worry, darling. Nothing like that will ever happen.
Stan and Ollie manage to foil the marriage by substituting Stan for the bride, and they tear up the mortgage. In revenge, Barnaby schemes to have Bo Peep's fiancée Tom Tom banished to Bogeyland. Stan and Ollie venture into Bogeyland to rescue Tom Tom and Bo Peep. As they make their escape, Barnaby leads the bogeyman in an attack on Toyland.
Oh, the bogeyman!
Can Stan and Ollie save the day? Maybe Stan's toy shop mistake is a blessing in disguise. Laurel and Hardy's characters are cheerful, kind, and helpful, even though their helpfulness usually results in disaster. Their comedy is often physical, but seldom violent, unless they're provoked. Stan and Ollie fit nicely into the Toyland setting, because their lack of worldliness gives them a childlike quality.
Don't you worry, Mother Peep. Stanny and me'll find a way to get the mortgage from that old buzzard.
He sure is an old buzzard. You know what I'd like to do?
What?
I'd like to put on this shoe and kick him right in the pants.
All right, Mr. Barnaby, there's no use hiding. We know where you are. Are you coming up?
You better come up dead or alive.
Now, how can he come up dead when he's alive?
Let's drop a rock on him, then we'll make him dead when he's alive.
Now you're talking sense.
Look out!
Don't tell him to look out.
Well, it might have hit him.
That's what I wanted to do.
Did it hit you?
Not a sound.
It must have got him.
Go down and bring him up.
You go down and bring him up.
All right. I'll compromise. We'll both go down.
That's better.
Go ahead.
The supporting roles are filled by a remarkably young cast. Henry Kleinbach, later known as Henry Brandon, was only 21 when he played Old Barnaby. Charlotte Henry, who played Bo Peep, was only 20, while Felix Knight, who played Tom Tom, was a mere 19 years old. In 1990, Felix Knight shared his recollections with Laurel and Hardy historian Scott McGillivray.
It strikes me that the atmosphere while making Babes in Toyland might have been similar to a college light opera company, because all the leads were young. Charlotte Henry, yourself,
that's right.
Henry
that's
Brandon.
Right. That's right. I looked very young at that time. I was 19, and you couldn't tell whether I was 14 or 15. Oh, I have a very funny story to tell you. We have a very nice lady who cleans for us, and she had a young son. And it was around Thanksgiving, and he came with her when she came to work. He'd just seen Babes in Toyland. My wife was there. I wasn't home, she told us this later. And he said to her, he said, Mama, don't you think Mrs. Knight's a little old for him? Because he saw me when I was 19 in the movie, and he saw her 50.
Babes in Toyland is one of those rare movies that can truly be enjoyed by all ages. Although the setting and characters appeal to children, the movie as a whole is not slanted toward juvenile tastes. When it was first released in mid-December of 1934, its publicity insisted, "Don't send the kiddies, bring them. You will enjoy it as much as they will." That advice holds true today. Watch this movie with your kids, and you won't be disappointed. Since its initial release, The film has been reissued many times, usually under the title March of the Wooden Soldiers. And of course, it continues to be a Christmas tradition on TV. But if you want a DVD for your movie collection, look for the beautifully colorized version released by Good Times Video. A second colorized version, released by Legend Films, and the original black and white version, released by MGM Video, are also available on DVD. But beware of other DVD releases. They may contain public domain reissue versions that are incomplete. From the Mary Podcast Projection Room, this is Mary Carey. A big thank you to Scott McGillivray, author of Laurel and Hardy from the 40s Forward, for permission to use excerpts from his interview with Felix Knight. Merry Christmas and happy holiday viewing.
Christmas comedy comes to us in many forms, and in the age before extensive radio productions, it came in the form of stories and art produced in magazines. It was during this period of American history when print media dominated that a beloved icon of art and of Christmas humor surfaced in the person of Norman Rockwell. Rockwell's work captures the essence of early 20th century living, as his paintings work as a snapshot of life and society in those times. The work of Norman Rockwell continues to connect with audiences because they tell the story of small-town American life with wit and humor against the backdrop of a quickly changing American landscape. From the abundant excesses of the 1920s to the Depression-era drama of the 1930s to the worried patriotic images of war in the 1940s, the work of Norman Rockwell mirrored what America was feeling and experiencing. Rockwell was born in 1894 in New York City. His artistic talents were evidently discovered early as he transferred from high school at age 14 into various art schools. Rockwell's first paid job came as an artist at age 15, when he was commissioned to produce 4 Christmas cards. His earliest published works were for children's publications, St. Nicholas Magazine and Boy's Life. Rockwell's first Christmas cover was for an issue of Boy's Life in 1913, when Rockwell was just 19 years old. Rockwell painted more than 30 Christmas-themed covers for the Saturday Evening Post in the course of his 47-year stint at the magazine, and more than 70 of his most famous works address Christmas themes. Rockwell's critics were quick to label his work too heavily sentimental, or sometimes lacking in a substantive message. His Christmas works especially are criticized as emphasizing Santa Claus too much and not emphasizing the Christ child at all. But just as his famous series The Four Freedoms are not about World War II, Rockwell's Christmas work isn't actually about Christmas. It is about experiencing Christmas in America. Like most of his works, Rockwell steered clear of moralizing his Christmas images, focusing instead on humor and the family experience of Christmas together. Rockwell had a knack for weaving personal elements in some of his most famous Christmas paintings. The 1948 Christmas cover of the Post is titled Christmas Homecoming, telling the story so familiar to families who had spent several Christmas seasons separated from loved ones during the war. In the painting are the faces of Rockwell's children, his wife, a neighbor, and even a co-worker from the Post. Rockwell's humor lives on through the merchandising of his works in the form of calendars, prints, and all manner of giftware, which remain popular with an adoring American public even now. Just as Rockwell was coming of age, so too was the era of mass media in audio. The first radio stations were licensed in the early 1920s, and by the 30s, the medium had become the centerpiece of the American living room, as families would gather around the radio to listen to dramas, comedies, and variety shows broadcast from coast to coast. Veterans of vaudeville took their talents to radio, and soon names like Bob Hope, Edgar Bergen, and Charlie McCarthy, and others became famous for their works first on radio, and later in film and on television. At no time was radio more important than when families were separated during World War II. Here now is an excerpt from the timeless Jack Benny in his days before television performing his own brand of Christmas comedy during World War II.
'Tis the night before Christmas, and at Jack Benny's house, there are presents for all, even cheese for the mouse. Jack is up on a chair, then he's down on his knee, but you have to do that when you're trimming a tree.
Well, we're all through, Mary. It was nice of you to come over and help me trim the tree.
Well, if I didn't, you'd never get it done. Say, Jack, shall I put the snow around the bottom now?
Not yet. I want to see if the lights are working. I'll hold up the bulbs, and when I say ready, you plug it in.
Okay. Ready?
Ready. Pull it out! Pull it out! Pull it out! My goodness.
Jack, why did you make me shut it off? Those lights were so pretty, especially those two blue ones that kept flashing on and off.
Those were my eyes. I must have been holding on to a bare wire.
Well, it's your own fault. Every time you fool around with electricity, something goes wrong.
It does now. I know plenty about electricity.
Oh, sure. Remember what happened 2 years ago when you fixed your doorbell?
What happened?
I pushed the button and it burned down Cosby's house.
Stop exaggerating. Anyway, hand me that roll of tape. Give me that tape. I'll fix this bare wire right now.
Hey, yeah.
Thanks. Comes to electricity. I know what I'm doing. See, when you see a bare wire, you just tape it up like this. And that way, it's insulated against outside elements. There, that ought to be enough tape. All right, Mary, plug it in.
Okay.
Pull it out! For heaven's sake.
What happened, Jack?
I taped my finger to the wire. That's what happened.
Oh, gee. And that time it is even prettier than before.
What do you mean?
Your nose lit up, too.
It did not. Let's get this tree finished before the gang gets here.
But, Jack, what about the light?
We'll have to let that go until later. Now, hand me one of those...
Oh, Mr. Benny!
What is it, Rochester?
I baked that cake like you told me to.
Good. Did you have enough whipped cream to spell out Merry Christmas on top?
Yeah. Say, boss, how many R's in Merry?
Two.
Oh.
So you better add one.
Add one? I better cross one out. I got three.
Well, leave it. It's better than ruining the cake.
Okay.
Oh, Rochester, will you please take these Christmas tree lights and fix them?
Fix them?
Yes.
I ain't fooling around with electricity.
Now, what are you afraid of?
I ain't gonna get hit by nothing I can't hit back.
Oh, Roger. Imagine being afraid of electricity. Suppose Robert Fulton was afraid of electricity. He never would have invented the electric light. Would he?
Jack, you're thinking of Thomas Edison.
Edison? Well, then, what did Robert Fulton do?
He said, don't give up the ship.
That was John Paul Jones. Now, let's not start that again. Now, Rochester, please fix these lights, will you?
Okay. Let's see. Now, in electricity, there's the electrons and the electrodes. Then there's the positive and the negative. But I ain't positive which one is negative. Then there's the atom. Now, the atoms are supposed to go from the positive to the negative. Or maybe they go from the electrons to the electrodes. Then again, maybe they go from Natchez to Mobile.
Rochester.
Now, as long as these atoms keep passing each other, everything is all right.
Yeah.
But when they meet halfway and start fighting, they're going to turn on anybody who tries to butt in.
Rochester, I'm not interested in the scientific details. I just want you to fix those lights. And I promise you, while you're holding the wires, no one in this room will turn on the switch.
I know, boss. While I'm holding the wire, you ain't going to turn on the switch. And Miss Livingston ain't going to turn on the switch.
Of course not.
But way up there at Boulder Dam is a little man sitting in a room with thousands of wires around him.
What?
How do I know he ain't going to do something just to break the monotony?
Oh, all right. I'll fix it myself.
In the 1950s, the worlds of radio and television collided. Slowly, the shows found and beloved on radio migrated over to television. But before radio had a chance to die completely as the premier form of broadcast entertainment, Stan Freberg hung around the airwaves long enough to poke television in the eye. Here is Tim Germain of CustomsOfChristmas.com to share with us the story of Dragnet, made famous on TV by Jack Webb and seriously parodied by Stan Freberg.
The Yuletide, a season of food, fun, friends and family, and grandmas being run over by reindeer. My name's Tim, S.D. Kluger on the My Merry Christmas forums. I'm owner and webmaster of customsofchristmas.com. August, 1953. Comedian Stan Freberg decides to write a parody of the popular radio TV show Dragnet. He presents the script to Capitol Records and expresses the desire to use the Dragnet Orchestra. Capitol Records insists he get permission. Freberg takes the script to Jack Webb, star and creator of Dragnet. Webb loves it. He gives permission. After several retakes due to trombone players laughing so hard at the jokes they couldn't play their instruments, St. George and the Dragnet is released and climbs to number one on the charts. November 1953. Capitol Records pressures Freberg to produce another Dragnet parody for Christmas. Freberg teams up with Dawes Butler, known for doing the voices of Yogi Bear, Quickdraw McGraw, Snagglepuss, and Huckleberry Hound, to write the script for Christmas Dragnet. Freberg plays the character Joe Wednesday, a takeoff on Jack Webb's character Joe Friday, and Dawes Butler plays Frank Jones, taken from Joe Friday's partner, Frank Smith. He also plays a man named Grudge and a brownie. Freberg uses the Dragnet Orchestra again. Christmas Dragnet is released in two parts on sides A and B of a 45 RPM album. Today it is most often played as one continuous piece. How? By removing the closing music from part one. The album goes to number 13 on the charts. In 1954, Capitol Records re-releases the album, but they change the name to YuleNet. Reason? Unknown. Christmas Dragnet is now enjoyed by millions of people every Christmas season. Merry Christmas and God bless.
This is the season. My name is Wednesday. My partner is Frank Jones. The chief is Captain Kellogg. December the 24th, Christmas Eve, they brought in a guy named Grudge. When I heard what they booked him on, my blood ran cold. It was a 409-6325-096704, not believing in Santa Claus. 4:35 p.m., I was working the holiday watch at a homicide with Frank.
Hang up your stocking yet, Joe?
Yeah, just before I come down. You too, Frank?
Always do. Hung it up early just in case I have to work late tonight. Wouldn't want to miss out when Santa Claus comes, you know.
Mm-hmm, sure wouldn't. Be a shame.
What you gonna do tomorrow, Joe? What you gonna do on Christmas? You got any plans?
Nothing much.
Why don't you come by the house, Joe? We're gonna have Christmas dinner. You know, all the trimmings.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey, celery stuffing, oysters maybe, chestnuts.
Mm-hmm.
All the trimmings. Cranberry sauce. Love to have you.
Mm-hmm.
The missus always fixes a plate of relish with them little carrot sticks. You know, olives, pickles, scallions. Most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions. Did you ever notice that, Joe?
Ever notice what, Frank?
How most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions.
Mm-hmm. Scallions.
Anytime after two, Joe. Love to have you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see.
Love to have you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see.
The missus always fixes a plate of relish with them carrot sticks. You know them little carrot sticks?
Mm-hmm.
Olives, pickles, scallions.
Mm-hmm. Let's not go through that again.
Love to have you. Go through what again, Joe?
How most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions.
Oh. You noticed that too, huh, Joe?
Homicide, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
What's the matter, Joe? What's the matter, Joe?
Bringing a guy in a 409-6325-096704.
You mean?
Yeah. Guy don't believe in scallions. I mean, Santa Claus. 6:29 p.m. We questioned the guy who didn't believe in Santa Claus, a guy named Grudge. Says here your name's Grudge, is that right?
Yeah.
You said you didn't believe in Santa Claus?
It's hard to believe what you said. Did you really say that?
Sure I said it. How do you know there's a Santa Claus? You got a picture of him?
No, no mugshot.
Any fingerprints?
Mm-mm, no latent prints. I just know that's all. It's like saying there isn't an Easter Bunny.
That's another guy there ain't no of.
Mm-hmm, well, that's your story, mister.
Joe, he just said that to make me feel bad, didn't he? There really is an Easter Bunny, isn't there, Joe?
Listen, Grudge, didn't I pick you up 3 years ago on a 1492 for not believing in Columbus?
Yeah, I don't believe in Cleveland or Cincinnati either.
How about Toledo?
I ain't made up my mind yet about Toledo.
Okay, mister, I get the picture now. You don't believe in nothing, do you?
Nothing. And you want to know something else?
What's that?
I'm going to get up and I'm going to walk right out of this room. Because you guys ain't got nothing on me. There ain't no law against not believing in Santa Claus.
There is in my book. Let me tell you something, mister. I'm going to prove there's a Santa Claus if it takes me all night.
Yeah, pretty funny. The police department's got nothing else to do.
Let me straighten you out, buddy. This one's on Frank and me. Right, Frank? Right, Frank?
There really is an Easter Bunny, isn't there, Joe? You know, hippity-hopping down the bunny trail?
I took Grudge over to the helicopter, got in, flew around the city for hours. I showed him department stores. What's hurrying in and out of those department stores, Grudge?
Happy people! But I ain't impressed!
I showed him stockings. How are those stockings hung, Grudge?
By the chimney with care, but I didn't hang none up.
I showed him children, nestled all snug in their beds. What's dancing in her heads, Grudge?
Visions of sugar plums. But you ain't selling me. There ain't no Santa Claus.
He still didn't believe. There was only one thing left to do. My job, get to the North Pole. 11:45 p.m. We arrived at the North Pole. I set the plane down. We walked over to Sandy's workshop. Rang the bell. Pardon me, sir. Can I ask you a few questions?
Why, sure. Just tickle me to death.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a brownie.
What are you doing at the North Pole with a southern accent?
Well, the boss sort of ran short on help this year, so he had to recruit a few of us brownies from the South Pole.
Mm-hmm. That figures.
What a waste of time.
Could we talk to your boss, please?
Oh, he's out. You would come on the one night he's out in the whole year.
Mm-hmm. What's your particular job, Mr. Brownie?
My boss has 8 tiny reindeer. My job? Feed them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. What do you feed them?
Well, most times I fix up a little plate of relish. Olives, pickles, and them carrot sticks. You know them little old carrot sticks?
Mm-hmm.
And scallions.
Most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions.
How do you know?
Just a stab in the dark. The little man showed us through the workshop.
My boss will be back for the second load pretty soon. Say, would you all like to hear an interesting story?
Yes, sir.
Will you see that huge pile of presents over there?
Mm-hmm.
Man, look at all that stuff.
Would you believe it? They're all for the same man, been piling up here year after year.
Why didn't the guy ever get them?
Yeah, why?
Because he didn't believe in my boss. You know the rules.
Mm-hmm, we know.
I don't suppose there's no chance that this guy can still...
Get the presents? Oh, sure, he gets them all, the minute he believes. But I don't suppose he ever will.
Too bad about that guy. What's his name?
Don't say it. I don't want to hear it.
Come on, Mr. Brownie. What's his name?
His name? Grudge.
The Brownie saw us to the door, wished us a Merry Christmas. We were heading back to the plane when it happened.
Hey!
Yeah, Grudge?
You know that guy I said I didn't believe in?
Who's that?
Santa Claus?
Yes, sir.
You think I'm too old to change my mind?
You're never too old, Mr. Grudge.
Well, then I believe in Santa Claus! And Columbus.
How about Cleveland, Cincinnati, and the Easter Bunny?
Yeah, them too.
And Toledo?
I still ain't made up my mind yet about Toledo.
Look, Grudge, up in the sky. He's coming back for the second load.
It's Santa Claus! It's Santa Claus!
There's the only guy I know can make everybody happy in one night.
Yeah, he must have the biggest heart in the whole world.
That's about the size of it.
Michael Harriet of ChristmasFlicks.com, we assign the impossible task of identifying the top 5 funniest moments of Christmas movie history. How would you solve such a quest? When he submitted his answers, I just had to take him to task, but for now, these are the moments we've settled on. At number 5 sits a scene from the classic movie Elf, starring Will Ferrell, who in this scene is pretty sure that the department store Santa in front of him is an imposter.
Who the heck are you?
What are you talking about? I'm Santa Claus.
No, you're not.
Why, of course I am!
You're Santa! What song did I sing for you on your birthday this year?
Happy birthday, of course! how old are you, son?
4.
You're a big boy. What's your name?
Paul.
And what can I get you for Christmas?
Don't tell him what you want. He's a liar.
Let the kid talk.
You disgust me. How can you live with yourself?
Just cool it, Zippy.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Look, I'm not kidding.
You're a fake.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead? Huh? No, he's kidding.
You stink.
I think you're going to have a good Christmas, all right?
You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
A Christmas Carol has been made many different ways, including as a comedy several times. But the most gentle version, and one of the most fun, comes from the Muppets, and this ranks number 4. In this scene, the storytellers in the form of Gonzo and Rizzo go a little away from the script that Dickens wrote.
It was Christmas Eve. Night was falling, and the lamplighters were plying their trade. Hey, light the lamp, not the rat!
My apologies.
Put me out!
Thank you. You're welcome.
In 1990, Home Alone set records at the box office with the story of a boy left home alone to defend the family castle from would-be burglars and to prepare for Christmas. We learned a lot from Kevin McAllister, including this scene in which he orders a pizza.
Who is it?
It's Little Nero, sir. I have your pizza.
Leave it on the doorstep and get the hell out of here.
Okay. Well, what about the money?
What money?
Well, you have to pay for your pizza, sir.
That effect. How much do I owe you?
That'll be $11.80, sir.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Cheapskate.
Hey, I'm gonna give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead. 1, 2, 10.
Lovely cheese pizza, just for me.
If there is a movie played nearly as much as It's a Wonderful Life each season, it has to be Gene Shepherd's A Christmas Story, the tale of one child's wish for a BB gun for Christmas. There are numerous quotable scenes in the movie that are hilarious, but this scene seems to get remembered the most.
Exact exchange and nuance of phrase in this ritual is very important.
Are you kidding? Stick my tongue to that stupid pole, that's dumb.
That's cause you know it'll stick.
You're full of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
like double dog dare ya.
Now it was serious. A double dog dare. What else was left but a triple dare you? And finally, the coup de grace of all dares, the sinister triple dog dare.
I triple dog dare you!
Schwartz created a slight breach of etiquette by skipping the triple dare and going right for the throat.
All right.
Come on, Carrie.
Well, go on, smartass, and do it.
I'm going.
Flick's spine stiffened, his lips curled in a defiant sneer. There's no going back now.
This is nuts.
At number 1, we all agreed on the movie. We just couldn't agree on which clip to use. In fact, in reviewing the clips available, we had a tough time finding one suitable for a G-rated venue like the Merry Podcast. But don't let that fact deter you, however. This movie preview from Christmas Vacation gives you all the highlights in a family-friendly way.
'Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la.
After vacationing across America and throughout Europe,
take it, Russ.
This holiday season, the Griswolds are going to play it safe.
Clark, we're stuck under a truck.
Oops. They're staying at home.
I give you the Griswold family Christmas tree.
Hope you're not getting sap all over your sweater, Clark.
All Clark wants is a quiet, old-fashioned Christmas. Sorry.
Got a little knot here. You can work on that.
What he's going to get is the gift that keeps on living.
Merry Christmas.
His family.
We didn't come to impose.
Oh, hell, there's plenty of room.
Do you sleep with your brother? Do you know how sick and twisted that is, Mom?
Well, I'm sleeping with your father.
Have you got a kiss for me?
You better take a rain check on that, Art. He's got lip fungus they ain't identified yet.
But no holiday could ever be more deeply touching.
We were gonna call, but Eddie wanted to make it a surprise.
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
We're really gonna fly down the hill with this stuff.
So genuinely moving.
Can I refill your eggnog for you?
Drive you out to the middle of nowhere, leave you for dead?
More truly uplifting.
Can I show you something?
That was just browsing.
Or more down to earth.
Merry Christmas!
If Santa is smart, he'll stay well clear of this joint. It's a death trap.
Then Christmas with the Griswolds.
Everybody come out quick, look at the lights!
They want you to say grace.
I pledge allegiance to the flag. The United States of America.
This year, let Chevy Chase light up your holidays. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
That thing had 9 lives. She just spent them all.
You
woo!
Crack up.
A discussion of Christmas comedy just could not be complete without featuring the comedy of Bob Hope, whose talent spanned not only the generations, but also moved from vaudeville to radio to film, and then onto television. While Christmas is most tied to Bob Hope's service in the military, with free shows he provided nearly every Christmas to servicemen stationed in war zones around the world, we'd like to feature two clips of Bob Hope recorded nearly 40 years apart. The first one comes from Christmas Day 1945, a war-era production most certainly in tune with the times.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob, Christmas Command Hope, telling all you occupation troops that are wearing iron lids, how are you going to get enough points to come back when it's Crosby who keeps having kids? Of course, even in the occupation troops are issuing passes to certain fellas for Christmas. Issuing passes to certain fellas for Christmas. That's an army expression meaning eeny, meeny, miny, there ain't no mole. But back home, we're having our first peacetime Christmas in 4 years, and you should see the mobs at the stores. I went up to one woman, and I said, isn't it wonderful to do Christmas shopping now that all the fighting has stopped? But she didn't answer me. How can you talk with all your teeth knocked out? I went out to do a little shopping myself, and you should have seen the mobs of people. The streets were so crowded, my suspenders broke, and I walked 6 blocks before my pants fell down. Inside the stores, it was even worse. Boy, was it crowded. I never saw so many shopping bags. And there were some pretty girls, too. I went up... I tried to hide it from you. I went up to the second floor on an escalator. You know what an escalator is. That's where you keep right on going up without doing anything yourself. Like a second lieutenant. But you, But you should have seen that second floor. The whole crowd moved in the same direction. Whether you liked it or not, you bought a silk nightgown. And on me, it looked good. There was such a mob, I climbed up on a counter to get some air, and before I could climb down, I was sold for $1.98. There was quite a fight going on one counter. They just won a pair of beautiful silk underwear shorts for sale. And a general had hold of one end with both hands, and the civilian was pulling on the other. Just then, a private walked in and saluted. He should be out of the guardhouse by 1954. But the big hit this Christmas in 1945 is the new cars. A lot of these auto companies have been working on airplanes, and they're still a little confused. In fact, one car's new speedometer, when it hits 60, a red light flashes. When it hits 75, a bell rings. And when it hits 110, a voice says, "There's been a slight mistake in the assembly line, bud. You better bail out." Really, you should see the wonderful new improvements. The two biggest features are air brakes and unbreakable windshields. You can speed up to 100 miles an hour and stop on a dime. Then you press a special button and a putty knife scrapes you off the windshield. Everything is automatic. In fact, this year you press a button that presses a button. But the best thing in the new cars is a special horn. When you pass a brunette, it plays good, good, good. When you pass a blonde, it plays "That's for me." And when you pass a redhead, it stops and you play.
Forward the clock now to 1981 and the presidential administration of Ronald Reagan. During an NBC Christmas special, Bob Hope gave this monologue showcasing his timeless style.
And now, here's the star of our show, Bob Hope!
Thank you very much. I want to say that this is Bob 5 days till Christmas Hope saying, I know that our first family wants nothing very fancy, but if you love your country, send some tablecloths to Nancy. I love it. Anyway, here I am, NBC's gift to you. Don't sneer. I'm a real novelty. I sing, I dance, I don't need batteries. I wasn't made in Japan, and I'm already assembled. Yes, that time of the year again when people draw closer together, but a man's best friend is his credit card. I'm surprised we're having Christmas this year. It's the only thing Reagan hasn't cut. And we don't need any Christmas lights around our house this year. Ed McMahon just moved in next door, and every time he sticks his nose out, the whole neighborhood glows. No, Ed has a new recipe for your holiday eggnog. Find a drunken cow and milk it. No, Washington is beautiful this time of the year. It's nice for a change to have nature provide the snow job. And Mr. Reagan is all ready for Santa's visit. His stockman is hung by the chimney with care. Tip O'Neill hung a stocking by the White House chimney and told Ronald Reagan to stuff it. And you only have 4 more days to buy batteries before Christmas, you know. And you need them because some of the new computer toys can even speak. I don't know about you, but I get nervous when something I'm only thinking about buying can talk me into buying it. And there's a pro football video game that's so realistic, in the middle of the play, it reaches out and tears your ligament. It's true. Kids used to wait up for Santa Claus. Now they wait up for space invaders. And they have chess games that you can't beat. Isn't that a terrible thing? That's a put down. For $29.95 now, you can buy something that's smarter than you are. I say, if the games are so damn smart, let them buy their own batteries.
Bob Hope's then-contemporary commentary skirted cultural and political lines. When it comes to Christmas, politics in particular is always in style, especially when it comes to the war on Christmas. Skewering the ACLU in this next bit is Balderdash and Humbug from their album Just in Time for Christmas.
We at the American Civil Liberties Union wish to express our best to you and yours at this special time of year. In the spirit of total inclusiveness, it is being made available in 68 languages and 489 dialects in audio, video, written, braille, and extrasensory editions.
Of a culturally diverse holiday season, just like the ones the courts decree, where the treetops may or may not glisten and children decide whether or not to listen to hear all the equally valued celebrations
of the different traditions.
I'm dreaming of a culturally diverse holiday season.
Wah, wah, wah.
With every vaguely worded card I write, may your days be how you intend for them to be. And may all your holiday seasons go appropriately.
Parody is the gold standard of comedy, and when it comes to Christmas, nobody is better than Bob Rivers. Here he is again, channeling AC/DC brilliantly with Jingle Hell's Bells. In 1953, 10-year-old Gayla Peavy recorded I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas, which resulted in a publicity stunt to actually give her a hippo after the song shot up the charts and became an instant hit. The hippo, named Matilda, was donated to an Oklahoma City zoo, where it lived for more than 50 years. This song has seen a resurgence in recent years, as it was re-recorded by Gretchen Wilson in 2009.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. I don't think Santa Claus will mind you. Bring him through the front door, that's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. hippopotamus will do. No crocodiles or rhinoceroses. I only like hippopotamuses, and hippopotamuses like me too.
For the better part of an hour, we've been talking about Christmas comedy, and we're only scratching the surface of what is out there. Join us at MyMerryChristmas.com as we continue to explore the funnier side of Christmas in the future. It is, of course, November now, and the countdown to Christmas has advanced to the exciting last few weeks of the season. We have lots going on now at My Merry Christmas, and nothing is bigger than Santa Sleigh 2011, our little effort to help raise money for a few families in need this season. This year we've taken on a bigger project to help out the effort, and with the contributions of the community found on the Merry forums and the sites of the Merry Network, we have compiled our first ever Christmas cookbook titled The Sweet Treats of Christmas. 100% of the proceeds from this effort go directly to Santa Sleigh, but we've only got a limited supply of cookbooks available. They're shipping now and could be in your hands in time for Thanksgiving, so order it today by stopping by MyMerryChristmas.com. Santa Sleigh led to the creation of the cookbook, and now the cookbook has led to the creation of a permanent addition to the Merry Network and a new website called MerryChristmasRecipes.com. This new site has the ambitious goal of becoming the world's largest repository of Christmas recipes collected from around the world. We think it will be special because we're not gathering those recipes from publishers or chefs or buying a database of recipes found just about anywhere. We're collecting them from you, one at a time. Please stop by MerryChristmasRecipes.com to archive your Christmas recipes for all time. We also have another new member of the Merry Network family called MerryChristmasTV.net, a site devoted to all of Christmas on television. This comprehensive resource is compiled by a television industry insider who has done his Christmas listing duties for years offline and only this year presents his research for more to benefit from with this new site. As site updates for MerryChristmasTV.net get posted, it is automatically fed into the Merry Forum so you can keep informed year-round of where to find Christmas on TV. These efforts are, of course, just part of the new Christmas features we have for Christmas 2011. The annual Christmas exchanges are in progress. In fact, you can still sign up for the Christmas Gift Exchange, an all-new event for Christmas 2011. This, coupled with the effort to identify the all-time Christmas Top 100 at Merry Christmas Radio, are part and parcel of one grand event scheduled for December 11th of this year that we're calling the World's Largest Christmas Party. Around the world on December 11th, more than 30 hours overall, we will hold an event featuring the Top 100. We'll also have multiple live chats at ChristmasChatter.com and hopefully plenty of video entrants into our contest of sharing Christmas where you live. A $250 grand prize in the form of an Amazon gift card will be awarded to our winner, so hopefully you're working on a video that shows Christmas in your part of the world. Details can be found at our website at MyMerryChristmas.com. The fun continues in our next episode of the Merry Podcast as we celebrate the big Thanksgiving show. We'll have the latest from Santa, including instructions on how to track Santa this year from SantaUpdate.com. Plus more new music for Christmas 2011 will be featured and a lot more. As we leave you now, we acknowledge the talents of so many who have contributed to this Merry episode, including our own Mary Carey, Tim Germain of CustomsOfChristmas.com, and Michael Harriet of ChristmasFlix.com. We thank John Schmidt for our theme music and the abundant comedic talents of Bob Rivers, Bill Cosby, Adam Sandler, Tom Lehrer, Stan Freeberg, Ray Stevens, Balderdash and Humbug, Norman Lear, Jerry Seinfeld, Kip Adada, Laurel and Hardy, Bob Hope, CBS Television, Warner Brother Pictures, 20th Century Fox, Jimmy Boyd, Gayla Peavy, and Jack Benny and all the stars of stage, screen, and radio who bring us the comedy of Christmas. For MyMerryChristmas.com, I'm Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.